In the Pasha Tzaveh, In the Pasha Tzaveh, I want to comment on a pasuk here in Perek Chofes. As you know, the two Pashas of Truma Tzaveh are devoted to the Mishkan. Truma, of course, that we just read, focuses primarily on the Kalim of the Mishkan. We have a rather graphic description of different Klei Mishkan, talking about the menorah, talking about the Aron HaKodesh, and the like, the Kruvim that we spoke about last week. And now in Tetzaveh, the discussion is about the Bigde Kehuna. There is a pasuk, which is a very striking pasuk, that describes the role of Aron HaKohen. And this pasuk was used to describe one of the Gdolei Ador, who was a great Talmid Chacham and a great tzaddik, the son-in-law of Rav Soloveitchik, Hagaon of Aron v'Chassidim Zatzal. In the context of his pesach that was said for him, his name was Aaron of Aron v'Chassidim, and they cited this pesukim, and I would like to focus on that a little bit if I can. I'm reading here in Tetzaveh Perek Chofes. Now, Perek Chofes, as you can see, begins actually this particular section that I mentioned, it talks about the Ephod and the Choshen. And you're aware that Moshe Rabbeinu was told to make the Ephod, which is a kind of apron, and the Choshen, which had on it, as you know, the Pasuk says here in Perek Chofes, Pasuk Yitzayin, we lay Savo, we lost Eben, our Bot, Tur, Avon. We have four rows of stones. And these Avonim, of course, have in it the Urim and Tumim. And according to Rashi, the Urim and Tumim contain the Shem of Hashem, and they are placed into the Choshen. And now, in Pasuk HaTes, the Torah writes the following Pasuk. B'nasa Aaron, Eshmos B'nai Yisrael, B'choshen HaMishpot. I'm reading it on page 202. Perek Chofes, Pasuk HaTes. Aaron is going to carry Shmos B'nai Yisrael, the names of Klal Yisrael, B'choshen HaMishpot. Of course, they are, as I said, embedded in the Choshen Mishpot. Al Libo. He's going to carry them on his heart. He's going to carry them in his heart, below HaKodesh, L'Zikaron, L'Vnei Hashem Tamid. You're probably aware a little bit, in Tanakh, you have the Urim Tumim, you have it in the Torah, whenever they had the need to go ahead and consult a kind of prophetic source, so the Urim Tumim was the source that was chosen, and then they would know what the Dvar Hashem is, derech the Urim Tumim. Pasuk Lamed. V'na Sator, Choshen HaMishpot, Esa Urim V'yasa Tumim. In this Choshen Mishpat that was carried by Aaron HaKohen, a kind of breastplate, so you have the Urim and Tumim. V'ayu Alev Aaron, again the same Lashon is used again. Bevo L'Tnei Hashem. V'nasa Aharon Es Mishpat B'nei Yisrael Al Libo L'Tnei Hashem Tumim. So you notice that there's a language that's used here a number of times, namely the language of Al Libo. It's found in Chavtes, and then again it's found in Pasuk Lamed Alev Aaron, and the third time at the end of the Pasuk, that Aaron carried Mishpat B'nei Yisrael Al Libo L'Tnei Hashem Tamid. It's a striking pasuk, and this particular language is also very, very striking. Rashi is the one who comments what I mentioned to you, that Rashi points out that the Choshen that carried the Urim B'tumim, the Urim B'tumim had this ability to go ahead and was a kind of conduit to Hashem Yisbarach. There's a Gemara in Shabbos, and I want to just begin with that Gemara. The Gemara actually comments in Shabbos that, if you remember, in the beginning of Sefer Shmos, when Moshe Rabbeinu was delegated to go on a mission to Mitzrayim and become the Manig of Am Yisrael, so we have a very striking statement that the Gemara comments on, the Gemara in Shabbos, on Kuf Lamates. The Gemara comments in the Shabbos that Aaron HaKohen, at one point, is going to meet Moshe Rabbeinu. You're probably aware of the fact they had not seen each other in many, many years, because Moshe went where? He went to Midian. If you recall, you look at the beginning of Yishmael, so you see the psukim that are well known. Now Moshe Rabbeinu, we have to be given the shlichus on the part of Hashem, so Moshe Rabbeinu is coming back. And then Hashem tells him that Aaron HaKohen is going to meet you, and the lashon of the Gemara is that Beracha v'samach b'libo, that Aaron is going to see you v'samach b'libo. Again, the similar language that's used over here is used over there as well. Aaron is going to be overjoyed. He's going to be very gratified that He's going to be accompanying you, because if you remember, Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem in the course of being delegated and deputized to do this mission, he remonstrates with Hashem for 7 days, I can't do it, I can't carry it out, I'm not worthy, all the back and forth between Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem Yisbarach. And Father Hashem says to him, don't worry, I'm going to appoint Aaron HaKohen, who'll be your Meturgeman, and he's going to meet you. And the Pasuk says, V'racha v'samach v'libo, he's going to be exceptionally happy. And let me just show you the pasuk. Wow, man, Perek Dalit in Shemos, pasuk Yudalit. And these Chumashim, it's page 133. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu remonstrated with Hashem, and back and forth, Hashem gets very angry at him. You have pasuk Yudalit. Vayichav Hashem v'Moshe v'ayom ha'lo aru l'chicha levi yodati ki daveri daveru. He'll be the spokesperson. V'gamu v'neyotze v'kvasecha, he's going to go out to greet you. V'racha v'samach v'libo. Says Rashi on the spot, the famous Rashi, you have it right there in front of you. Rashi comments, Lok she'atos savur she'imakvid alecha. You might have thought that essentially what's going to be that I was going to be very upset, very angry. Why? She'ato ola l'gdula. Because he, Moshe Rabbeinu, who was not on the scene for how long? For close to 80 years. Moshe Rabbeinu was not with his brethren, not with Am Yisrael and Mitzrayim. And who's the one who is, shall we say, dealing with them on a day-to-day kind of basis? Aaron HaKohen. And now suddenly, Aaron HaKohen is bypassed, Moshe Rabbeinu becomes the man of Yisrael. So therefore Rashi says, you would have thought that Aaron would be somewhat upset, somewhat stressed out by this. It seems to be unfair. Here I was, Imo Anofi Bitzara, I'm recalling myself all these years, and now suddenly I am bypassed. So Rashi says, no, on the contrary. Not only was Aaron not upset, B'racha B'samach B'libo. Aaron's going to be full of simcha, mali simcha. An astounding statement on the part of Rashi. And therefore Rashi says, because of that, Aaron was zochem to what? To the choshen hanosun al halev. Rashi says, that's how he was zochem to the choshen mishpat, which is alev Aaron, which is on the heart of Aaron HaKohen. But as I said, what's fascinating, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu is bringing within the wonderful tidings that Klal Yisrael were about to leave Mitzrayim, Berchush Gadol, cross the Yamsuf, go to Har Sinai, come to Eretz Yisrael, Arizona, Chalav Advash, a land of soil with milk and honey. That's the tidings of Moshe Rabbeinu. Isn't it obvious that Aaron would jump for joy? And what Rashi comments over here is that Aaron would have a feeling of pain, that's what one would have thought, and yet the Chazal tell us, and that's what Rashi indicates, and the Pasuk tells us, Aaron will not feel not even one twinge of pain or animosity towards Moshe, but rather, Beracha v'samach v'libo. So we see from here something which is very striking. That just like Moshe Rabbeinu, his only concern was doing that which was best for Aaron. What was Aaron's primary concern? Doing that which was best for Moshe Rabbeinu. These are two great tzaddikim. Moshe v'Aaron, B'chol ano, B'shmuel, B'koreishno, Koirin el Hashem, V'hu yaneh. Okay, just leave it at that. But you see from the pasuk, Moshe v'Aaron b'chol ano, that in effect, the pasuk underscores the fact that Moshe and Aaron are the leaders of Klal Yisrael. So it's amazing. And Chazal, in the Gemara and Shabbos that I mentioned, Aaron has no personal bias, and Aaron is totally at peace with his brother's joy. Absolutely no problem whatsoever, not even a twinge, the way Chazal actually described it. But Moshe didn't believe that Aaron would be completely glad at meeting him, and Hashem had to convince him. Now, let me mention another kasha that bothered my father, Olav Hashalom, and this kasha I asked my Rabbeim in the course of the last several decades. And it's an obvious kasha, which I'm sure you're aware of as well. You know, in the beginning of Rosh Chanan, what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? Moshe Rabbeinu wants to get into Eretz Yisrael. How many tefillos does Moshe Rabbeinu launch? Does he beseech Hashem Yisbarach? Kiminyan Rosh Chanan, 515 tefillos, Moshe Rabbeinu beseeches Hashem to enter Eretz Yisrael. Of course, he was bothered to enter Eretz Yisrael because of what chet? The chet of what happened at May Meriba. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron were not allowed. Take a look at Bamidbar, just to show you the psukim over there. In Bamidbar Perakov, there it's very clear. Pasuk Yud Beis. It's on page 389 in these Chumashim. There it says, "Vayom Hashem l'Moshe v'Aharon yamohem manten bi l'akdishenu le'adim le'Yisrael." Remember the simple shot over there. Moshe Rabbeinu was told to take the staff and speak to the rock. Instead, Moshe Rabbeinu struck the rock. There are different shotim and mishenim. Have a field day over here. How many averes there are, and what exactly avera was. But at the end, the pasuk says in Yud Beis, page 389, Perachot pasuk Yud Beis, yamohem manten bi l'akdishenu l'chein l'saviyas akol azel la'aretz Hashem nasati lehem. Who is Hashem speaking to? Both Moshe and Aaron. Both of them did not enter Eretz Israel, as you can see. And the pasuk says, "Hey, ma mei meriva yikimel asher rabu bnei Yisrael Hashem vayikadesh bav." So it's amazing that both Moshe and Aaron cannot enter Eretz Israel. Now look at West Hanan, the beginning of West Hanan. This is in Dvarim. That's on page 442. West Hanan al Hashem vayisai lemer, and Rashi indicates, and Chazal were the ones who really say it out, that Moshe Rabbeinu beseeched Hashem with 515 tefillos. The numerical value of the word Veschanan to allow him to enter Eretz Yisrael. Is Moshe understood the greatness of the opportunity to enter Eretz Yisrael? So what's amazing is the following kasha that my father asked me. Why doesn't Aaron HaKohen, why doesn't he daven? Why doesn't Aaron HaKohen daven and he doesn't recognize the greatness of Eretz Yisrael? The Gemara says in Saita that Moshe Rabbeinu, why do you want so much to enter Eretz Yisrael? V'chilecha v'piria v'zboa v'tuba v'tzarech. What, he wants to eat Yaffa oranges? Shalom aleichem. Eize zechut zachino. Was that Moshe Rabbeinu's interest? He wanted to enter Eretz Yisrael in order, as the pasuk and the psukim indicate, but the Gemara says in Saita, what he needs, Yaffa oranges? Have you ever had Yaffa oranges?
Quite delicious.
I agree with you. Remember, the Bach writes in Shulchan Aruch, the Bach says that the, why is it that the, this is an editorial note, so it's not connected to the Shia, but since you arrived, Baruch Hashem, the Bach says that the fruits and vegetables of Eretz Israel, why are they so tasty? I will make the following statement. I don't know if you'll agree with me, but I've eaten vegetables and fruit in Chutz Laretz, and I've eaten, Baruch Hashem, many times, vegetables and fruit in Eretz Yisrael. Ain't a dome. There's no comparison. The fruit and vegetables here are luscious beyond belief. And the vegetables in Chutz Laretz are jejun, insipid, tasteless, and absolutely, from my perspective, dry beyond belief. How do you explain it? So the Bach says, because the Perot of Eretz Yisrael, Yonek Me'akdusha Shel Eretz Yisrael. They derive their Gishmak from what? From the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. That's the Bach. Rabbi Yol Sirkis, one of the Mefarshim of the Shulchan Aruch, and that's an astounding statement. So now the question I'm asking, going back to the issue, Aaron HaKohen, we don't understand. It's true, both Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron are condemned because of what happened in Meriba, that they're not going to enter Eretz Yisrael. But Aaron HaKohen, we see Moshe Rabbeinu launches 515 tefillos. What about Aaron HaKohen? Why doesn't he launch any tefillos to get into Eretz Yisrael? Doesn't that question trouble you? And Aaron HaKohen actually was not had an additional reason why he should enter Eretz Yisrael, because he's a Kohen. So why didn't he daven to Hashem to enter Eretz Yisrael? So this is a question that troubled my father, Zechon Lebracha. And my father even compounded the question with the following. When you look at the Chet of Mei Meriba that I just mentioned before in Bamidbar, who would you say really was the primary personality involved in the Chet? Moshe Rabbeinu. The Pesukim are very clear. The Torah tells us that Hashem tells Moshe, Kach et hamate, v'akel ha'saida. But he's speaking to Moshe, he says, you should take the Makkah and gather the people, Atav Aaron Achicha, and speak to the rock. And Moshe Rabbeinu, instead of doing that, he strikes the rock, but it's all Moshe Rabbeinu. So Aaron HaKohen, offhand, one would say, was not the one who was actively involved in the Chet. So if that's the case, this father has justification in punishing Aaron than punishing Moshe Rabbeinu. So why do we find anywhere that Aaron should have beseeched Hashem to lift this terrible gzeira, this terrible decree? You hear the question? My father was bothered by this question decades ago. Yeah.
Doesn't Aaron not get entered because the Chet HaEgel?
Where does it say that?
Svara.
Svara?
I thought
the Chet HaEgel received kapara. Do you remember what the Torah says? Vayinocham Hashem al ha'ra, Hashem diber la'asot yamo. Hashem, in effect, gave them expiation. So I don't think, even though it's true, Aaron was involved in the Chet HaEgel, although there also there's a lot of discussion about what exactly his role was, and if you look at the Tzukim, it's mashma that he basically was involved in a tactic, in a strategy. He was trying to delay the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu had not come back, and therefore people were in a panic, so the Rabban, and Kuzari, and Ibn Ezra, and Rapsadigom, and many Rishon, that's how they explained it. Unlike Rashi, Rashi learns based on the Medrash that they were violation of three cardinal sins. But that's not how most Rishon learn. So it seems that and Hashem at the end forgave, but I'm saying here, Aaron should have offhand, literally prayed to Hashem, and he should be able to enter Eretz Yisrael. So I heard from Hagoyin who Abdem Sol Shlita the following answer, which to me is so striking, and that's really the main theme of my entire discussion tonight. Abdem Sol told me that Aaron was afraid, should he succeed in reversing Hashem's ruling, allowing him entry into Eretz Yisrael, Moshe would be terribly hurt at his own inability to do that.
Not vice versa.
What?
Not vice versa.
No. For that reason, Aaron was willing to forfeit the ability, one second, to cross the Eretz Yisrael. Just like Moshe was willing to forfeit great honor and the potential to attain lofty spiritual heights, if it would have meant causing Aaron even the slightest amount of pain, Aaron HaKohen gave up all the spirituality that Eretz Yisrael had to offer because he was frightened that maybe it would hurt Moshe Rabbeinu. Isn't that astounding? And that is exactly what the pasuk says, going to the pasuk that we began with in Shemot, Chavchet, Pasuk Lamed. We started with that pasuk, and that pasuk said the following. V'nasa Aaron, since we have here a number of very Sfaradim Tohorim Mechubadim, so we have to read the pasukim accordingly. So it says here, in Chavchet, Pasuk Lamed, the one that I began with, the very beginning, the pasuk says, if you recall, the Urim Betumim are placed in the Choshen of Mishpat. V'ha'yu al leiv Aaron b'vol of Hashem, v'nasa Aaron et mishpat b'nei Yisrael al yivol of Hashem tamid. Aaron, in effect, what is he doing? What is he carrying? Mishpat b'nei Yisrael al yivol. So we're talking about the pure heart of Aaron. And Chazal tell us, it's a pasuk in Tehillim that you're all familiar with. Namely, where's the pasuk that speaks about these two brothers besides the little Kalbach Nigan that we had before on Friday night? Moshe v'Aaron b'chonav b'shmo b'kori shmo. But the well-known pasuk, Kinei, Matov, Manoim, Shem et Achim Gam Yachad. Which Achim are we talking about?
Moshe v'Aaron.
Moshe v'Aaron. It's a Chazal. Referring to Moshe v'Aaron. Not any two brothers can be described in such terms. Certainly not Yitzhak and Yishmael, certainly not Yaakov and Esav, and not even the Shvatim, that their relationship was not always, shall we say, the smoothest. But here, Moshe and Aaron, that's all they want for each other, each one wishes nothing for himself, and only desires that the honor be bestowed upon his brother. That's the way it should be. One should not want any honor for himself, only for the other person. And we understand very well that even Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah says about him, Yo'ish Moshe, Anad Mo'ob, Nikol Adam, Ashraf, Pnei Adama, Moshe is the most humble of all people. At the end of Pashas Ba'alosa, in Bamidra over there, could not believe the level of Aaron's humility, and Hashem had to convince him that Aaron HaKohen would not be insulted. Now, since Joey asked about the Chet HaEgel, I've been thinking about it for the last few minutes, so maybe we can add a comment regarding that matter as well. It's true that Aaron sinned at the Chet HaEgel by listening to Klal Yisrael. But even that, I would venture to say, you know what it came about? It came about mitub lev shel Aaron. Came out from the goodness of his heart. Because Chazal tells us, Rashi quotes it over there, that Aaron was afraid that if he would not agree with their request to make the golden calf, people would kill him. Just like they killed his nephew Hur, according to Rashi, Rashi called some Chazal that there were three Averot, Gilarai, Shurudam, Abdazara. They killed his nephew Hur, refusing to comply with their demands. And Aaron's death would mean, the way the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, there's a Pasuk in Eicha, you probably know, that there would be a fulfillment of the Pasuk in Eicha, where the Navi says, In Yareg, Mikdash Hashem, Kohen the Navi. Aaron was both a Kohen, Aaron was also a Navi. How do we know that Aaron was a Kohen? That we know. How do we know he's a Navi? Pasuk says, Aaron Achicha, Yiyah, Nivi'echa. Even though the Mefarshim determined that to mean the Torgamot, he's the one of the spokesman, the Moshe Rabbeinu, but he's a Kohen and Navi. The Gemara says in the first parak of Sanhedrin, and this was Aaron was frightened of. He was afraid that that would be, that Pasuk in Eich would be Mekuyim. In the second parak of Eich, I believe it is, in Yaharei, B'mikdash Hashem, Kohen and Navi. And then there would be no recovery. So in order to save Klal Yisrael from destruction, here in Pasuk Yisisa, which they would be unable to recover from, so he was willing to construct the Egel Azov, even if it meant severe punishment, and had it not been for the tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu on his behalf, Aaron would have been destroyed. So even though Klal Yisrael were punished, had they killed Aaron, Chas v'Shalom, who knows how far the punishment would have extended. Aaron was willing to give up his share in the Olam Haba in order to prevent Klal Yisrael from doing this terrible sin. You hear what I'm saying, Joey? And all the Chazal say, you're not allowed to praise Aaron for what he did, because he was a miscalculation. That's the Gemara Tzahendi of Nafzayin, I believe. Ubecholzos, it was there are positive aspects that Aaron had in mind, and his mind, his heart was basically in the right place, as it were, since Lev Aaron is the critical element that I'm talking about today, tonight, that's what was at stake. And let me mention one thing in this vein, that also the same thing applies also to Megillat Esther. Since I'm mentioning this idea of Lev, so I believe it's the same yesod that's found over there. Take a look in the Megillah. You have a number of psukim that describe actually Esther. When her turn came, Ubagia Tor Esther, Bata Michael Don Mordechai, that Mordechai adopted her as his daughter. It says, Lo Biksha Dover. She was not interested in any honor. What does the Gemara say in Megillah? There are people here who learn my second Megillah. Namely, what was her sole interest? Her sole interest was Kvot Shamayim. How do we know that? It says, in Perek Bet of Esther, Pasuk 10. Ve'et sheva ha-naro, toriyot l'asasam v'esamelach. So Chazal said, the Gemara Megillah, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, that Rabbi said Esther would count the days of the week through these maids. Because she was in the company of non-Jews, she was afraid she would forget when Shabbat was. And so she had each maid represent a different day of the week, that's the Gemara, in my second Megillah. And therefore, when Fatima came, I don't know if that was her name, so she knew it was Sunday. And when the seventh maid came, she knew it was obviously Shabbos. So this is something which is amazing. Her entire modus operandi was the Kvot Shamayim. Masha'en came, there was another fellow who was Pumpaker, just the opposite. Who's that? Haman HaRasha. I would not use the two examples that you gave to the two gentlemen, some of Seresh. But rather, I would say Haman HaRasha, there's no one who can compare to his quest for honor. If you remember that the beginning of the Megillah, I think it's in Perek Gimel, where it says that Kol Avdei HaMelech Asher B'Shar HaMelech Korin B'Shtachavim L'Homer Ki Yichen Tziv Allah HaMelech U'Mordechai Lo Yichav Lo Yishtachavim. Mordechai refused to bow down to him, but everyone else actually bowed down to him. But, in effect, all the dignitaries, all the high-ranking officers bowed down to Haman. That was not enough. He made himself, the Gemara says in Megillah and Daf Yud, he made himself into an idol. He came in Avodah Zarah. He wanted people to prostrate themselves to him. He wanted to be deified. And again, you see that he and Mordechai have two different, totally two different mahalchim. There's a medrash, the Chazal, that I always find to be very, very telling. The medrash tells the story of a non-Jew who made a lavish kind of seudah, and he decided to serve all the delicacies in the world, bar none. One of the guests requested a certain dish. It was unavailable. So the host becomes furious and picked up all the food and started throwing it every direction. And this host had a Jewish neighbor who was apparently a member of Chazal. So the Talmud Chacham said, you had everything at this party, thousands of delicacies. Is it so bad that one of them was missing? So the non-Jew said, you Jews believe that there's life in Olam Haba. We do not. For us, there's only this world. Only Olam Hazeh. And therefore, God forbid we should be lacking even one item in this world That would not be something that would be in sync with our thinking. It's a medrash, chazal. Unbelievable. And this medrash actually tells us something which is very telling, and as I said just now, in terms of Haman and Esther, you see this unbelievable contrast between the two, which is really, to me anyway, something which is absolutely amazing. I wanted to share with you, in this vein, two stories, and I actually went searching to find the source of it, and these are two remarkable vignettes. After the Second World War, so there was a rabbinic figure, and became a rabbinic figure later on, his name was Rav Shimon Deitch, and I think he was if I'm not mistaken, Chernobyl Chassid. I'm not such an expert in the world of Chassidut, so I apologize for my lack of knowledge. This fellow was a child, I think, of about 12 years old when the Holocaust ended, and because he went through Gehenna, he didn't really have a chance to learn much about what it means to be a Jew. So he was in England, this individual, and he decided there was a yeshiva in England. It's a famous yeshiva, which was headed by a famous Rosh Hashiva. His name was Rabbi Moshe Schneider, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha. He was an absolute goyim, this person. I think it was a yeshiva called Toras Emes. I think it was a Rosh Hashiva both in Frankfurt, that's before the war, and then later on in London. After the war, he was a famous Rosh Hashiva. And he actually established a number of Mosdot Chinuch, a number of very significant educational institutions in England after the Second World War. He himself, I believe, was a Talmud of the Chabad Chaim, the Tzaddik Livracha. This is Moshe Schneider. And he was a very remarkable person. He had some very, very famous children. If I'm not mistaken, his son, Rav Gedalia Schneider, also is a very famous personality. He also has famous sons and sons-in-law. And for example, one of his sons-in-law, I think his name is Rav Eliezer Lapian, he's the son of Rav Eliyahu Lapian. If you heard of him, Rav Eliyahu Lapian was a famous Gedolei Balei HaMusar of the last generation, and many, many others as well. So this Rav Moshe Schneider established a yeshiva, and this fellow, is, I think he's 12 or 13 years old, and he didn't learn much, so he decides to ask the Rosh Yeshiva, can I enter the yeshiva? I never learned anything. And obviously that yeshiva had guys who were much older, people your age and much older, going to their 20s and mid-20s and late-20s. It was a real yeshiva with Derech HaLibud and all that. So he said to Rav Moshe Schneider that I would like to have a chance to go ahead and learn. So Rav Moshe Schneider was a tremendous personality, a very compassionate person, besides being a great gaon, a great tzaddik, so he let him in the yeshiva. Now the problem is the fellow can barely learn, doesn't have a clue how to go about learning or what to do, etc., etc. So he begins to ask different bachur in the yeshiva, could you learn with me? And could maybe give me some of your time where you'll be able to teach me some of the basics. He was asking Chumash and Rashi, not more than that. He didn't expect to get more than that. And a little Mishnayos. Rav HaTalmidim ignored him. Why would they spend time with this young man who is clearly a novice, someone who's just a beginner, a neophyte? They are established Talmidei Chachamim, great Torah scholars. Why would they spend time with him? And he was very frustrated. However, there were two Talmidim in the yeshiva, and it's a relatively large yeshiva. I think there were over 100 guys in the yeshiva at the time. That's called relatively large then. After the war, after the Shoah in London, there were two Talmidim who agreed to spend time with him. And the next number of years, they spent a fair amount of time with him. One was named Moshe, and one was named Tuvia. Those are the two Talmidim, Moshe and Tuvia. And over a period of time, they spent many, many hours, umpteen hours learning with him. Not every moment of the day, but obviously every single day they spent time learning with him. And over a period of time, he began to become a Ben Torah, and he even became a Talmid Chacham. And then later on, he got married, and he was zochet to someone who became a very successful individual in terms of his economic situation, and also at the same time, someone who was a fine Talmid Chacham. And it all came about because of Moshe and Tuvia. So many years later, He wanted to investigate what happened to this Moshe guy and to this Tuvia guy. What exactly? Where did they emerge a number of decades later? Because he began to think about they were responsible for his basically being observant and being Jewish and being committed and being knowledgeable. He thought he would investigate their situation. And it turns out that these two, Moshe and Tuvia, are the following personalities. You probably may have heard of one of them. Maybe you've heard of both. And maybe you've not heard of any of them, but I will inform you. So one of them is one of the Gdolei Ador. His name is Avitzel Tuvia Weiss. He's the head of they call him the Gaivet of Yerushalayim, of the Eidah Haredit. There's something called Eidah Haredit po. You are familiar with the Eidah Haredis? They have one of the Ashkochas here, as so, one of the biggest Ashkochas. And the Gaivet of Yerushalayim, his name is Avitzel Tuvia Weiss. I would suspect that today he must be in his 90s. I can't imagine anything less than that. I don't know, but I'm just assuming. He's someone who's a great Torah giant. And he actually was also, if I'm not mistaken, he was involved in the kidney transport. They went through all kinds of things, these people. But when they landed in Rav Moshe Shai's yeshiva, this was one of the fellows who decided to agree to learn with this individual. And he became one of the Gdolei Ador. And the other, and as I said, this story I went looking for to see, and it's actually written up. The other, his name is Hagoyin Rav Moshe Sternberg Shlita. Also, both of them are in their 90s. Moshe Sternberg is right here in Herndorf. And he's a giant beyond giant. I can't even begin to describe his greatness in Torah. Moshe Sternberg, he actually is someone who was mekur to the Chazon Ish, and mekur to the Biskarov, mekur to many Gdolei Yisrael, mechaber of many, many svarim. I don't know if you're familiar. He wrote many years ago, I would say about 55, 60 years ago. Oh, you should know about these people from England. You ever heard about Moshe Sternberg?
I have.
I imagine you did, because he's an Englishman, and he speaks English actually fluently. I think he's the Raivet of Yerushalayim. One is the Gaivet, and one is the Raivet. I'm not sure of all these titles. I'm not so good with titles. Anyway, so Moshe Sternberg wrote a series of Svarim called Mardi was Manim many, many years ago. He really has unbelievable lumbus, an unbelievable Chiddushei Torah, many, many volumes. He wrote, this is only 50, 60 years ago, he wrote these volumes of Moshe Sternberg. And then for a period of time, he became the Rosh Kollel and a Rav in South Africa, in Johannesburg. A good 15 years of his life was spent there.
Moshe Sternberg?
Moshe Sternberg, yeah. He was in, today's in Herndorf.
Is he Karen?
No. That's a different person. He's not.
He's not.
He's not a chassid. Not a chassid. The first one's a chassid. Hagoyin Rav Tuvia Weiss. He's a big chassid. I don't know what particular chassidut he belongs to, but Rav Moshe Sternberg is a real Litai type of fellow. Litvak, they call him. But he is the mechaber also recently of the last number of years called Tshuva Ba'anogav. I think it must be 6-7 volumes by now. Shelos and Tshuva and Kala Torah Kula. So these are the two people who actually were responsible for this individual becoming what he became. And it was very fascinating to me is that all the others are kamat not known bichlal. And after these two, who helped this young man at a time when he was in a very difficult situation and very young, and clearly etan shoah, they became the Gdolei Ador. That's an amazing situation to me, which Arayom Hazeh, I'm very astounded by. They were zochet to siyata d'shmaya, and a lot had to do with the chesed that they showed and the kindness. And I will now share with you a second story that also I'm familiar with, and I went looking again to check to verify this story. There was a great Gadol Batorah named Rabbi Chaskel Abramsky. You should know about him too. He, if you recall correctly, I think he died when he was also in his 90s, many, many years ago. I think he was Nifter in Tavshin Lamed Vav, which is 1976. So Rabbi Chaskel Abramsky was in Slutsk, and he ran away from the Russians, and he became the Rosh HaBezin in London. What's going on here, Tomar? You don't know about these great personalities? By the way, in the famous story about Rav Chaskel Abramsky, he once appeared in an English courtroom, and the judge asked him who he was. So he said that, I am the greatest rabbi in England.
Ooh.
So the judge was taken aback, a Goyish judge, a secular judge, and says, Rabbi, how could you say something like that? He said, well, you had me a moment ago say the truth, and only the truth, and I have to sort of affirm or swear, and I have to tell the truth, I can't lie. It's a famous story with Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky. So this Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky was in Slutsk, and then he ran away from the Russians and became a rabbi in London, and he wrote an entire parish on the entire Tosefta called Chazon Yecheskel. Many, many volumes. The giant, the genius. And he became one of the Gadol Yisrael. He was actually one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Slabodka. Later on, okay, so why am I telling you the story? Because at the time of the Bracha, that he said the following statement. This to me is remarkable. It's a Mishnah Pirkei Avos that maybe you're familiar with. These are people from London. So I assume you're familiar with that. Anyway, there are five Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says to Talmidim, Tzuru, Ezu Hiderech Tovashi Bakba Hadam. What's the proper way that a person should follow? So there's a whole series of opinions. And finally, there's an opinion of Lozman Arach. He says, Lev Tov. What's the key? What's more important than anything else? A good heart. And that, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, even though there are several other opinions, he is, what he said is number one. Lev Tov is more important than anything else. That's what the Gemara said in the Mishnah writes of Pirkei Avos. So it's very fascinating. If you take a look also, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is talking about the character traits of each of his Talmidim, he comes from Lozman Arach, who made this statement, and he calls him a Mayan HaMitgaber. What's a Mayan HaMitgaber? A well that is overflowing. You know what a Mayan is? What's the difference in a Mayan and a mikveh?
Mayan flows.
Excellent. And a mikveh is a standing body of water. How do we know that a mikveh is a standing body of water? Pasuk in Bereishis. Yikavu hamayim mitachas hashamayim el makom echad v'seira hayavasha v'yichay. The mikveh is a closed... You know what a mikveh is? What is it called? A ritual area? Maybe is that the proper word for you?
The swimming pool over there.
I would not use the term swimming pool. I don't like that term. Mikveh is not a swimming pool. But anyway, a swimming pool is probably puzzles a mikveh, since it most likely has mayim, which doesn't come from natural means.
Through
it to a 40 cell serene water. All right, we're saying that let's assume it's Hashoka and Zizriya. Let's go more. But anyway, so he's called the Mayan HaMitgaber. Is there a connection between Mayan HaMitgaber and the idea of Lev Tov? So Rav Cheskel Abramsky, that's all, said there's an organic connection, a very close connection. All of us want to be a Mayan HaMitgaber. What does that mean? All of us want to become B'nai Torah. What is the Shifa? What is the desire of every single one of us? To become B'nai Torah, we're not just interested in making a lot of money. That's not a bad thing, obviously. And that can help also in terms of doing mitzvot, the things of that sort, and supporting yeshivot, the Mosad of Chesed. But that's not our primary interest. A primary interest is one thing. Every one of us wants to become a Mayan HaMitgaber b'Torah. Wants to become a wellspring that will flow over with Torah. With Chidushei Torah, correct? That's really the desire, should be the desire of every single person. We want to answer kashyos, we want to be able to say good svaros, we want to be able to understand the sugya properly, we want to be able to present it properly, we want to be able to be armed with, I always tell them, the Gemara says, someone told me a number of years ago, these smartphones came out. So I said to him, what exactly are you going to come to the Almighty with after 120 years? He told me, I'm not joking. Shana Al student. Maybe it's the second or third week of the yeshiva, so I have to be fair. My smartphone. I'm going to come before Hashem is Baruch. And I said, the Gemara says, Ashi Mishavala Kam B'Talmuda B'Yodo. Happy is the person who comes here and he's got the Talmud B'Yodo. You're going to say, Ashi Mishavala Kam B'Smartphone B'Yodo. Wow, I don't think that's going to be received so well upstairs. That's what I told him. Anyway, so one might think, says Rav Cheskel Abramsky, in order to become a Mayan HaMitgaber, what do you need? You have to be an Eloi. You have to have a scintillating intellectual acuity. You have to be brilliant. You have to be a genius. You have to be, I don't know what. That's correct. Lo nachon bichlal. But one would have thought you have to be the son of Avraham Shulevitz. You have to be the grandson of the Nevadika. Just ignoring that comment. Anyway, so of course you have to be someone who is working hard, who's a charev, and the like and like. Said Rav Chassid Abramsky, you know what you need? One thing. Lev Tov. A person who has a Lev Tov, that person can become a Mayin HaMakar. Can become someone who is an unbelievable, overflowing cistern and well of water, Lev Tov. And the truth of the matter is that, I don't know, perhaps in Mitzvah Hashem, hopefully you'll get to know Gdolei Yisrael and the like, but anyone who knew Gdolei Yisrael, and I was zoche in my lifetime to be in a number of them.
I already know. Already
a number of Gdolei Yisrael. Could you go ahead and take this? And so there were every Gdolei Yisrael that I knew, I was zoche to be going to Rav Avadia Yosef Zatzal many times. I don't know how many times you met him. Never, you never met him? But you met your father, Shlita, also not. I was lucky to meet him many times. He was a fascinating personality. Besides, I'm not equipped to judge his greatness in Torah. I didn't come near his toenails. Matter of fact, I heard about Shlomo Fischer, who was a Rebbe of mine in the Yeshiva in Itri, where I learned in 1971-72. I asked him once, who's the biggest bucky in this, shall we say, era? He said me, Maran Rav Avadia. He's the greatest bucky. The biggest lamdan, the greatest gadol in our generation. And then he told me the next statement, which was even, I was even more flawed. He's the biggest bucky since the days of the, not Encyclopedia Talmudic, which was written by many, many people, but since the days of the, he told me, the Stechebe was written 200 years ago, which was astounding. He was a walking encyclopedia of Torah, Rav Avadia. But that's not the greatest Rav Avadia. Of course that's his greatness, undoubtedly. But you know what his greatness was? He had a Lev Tov, unbelievable heart. And that Lev reflects Klal Yisrael. Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's all. They interviewed him. I don't understand how that interview came about. In the New York Times, they interviewed him. How did you become the greatest Gadol HaTorah, the Igros Moshe, in the Ashkenazic world? He said, I don't really know, but I know one thing. Somebody asked me a question. I gave him a nice answer. And then he told his friend, you know, there's a guy there who knows how to answer questions. So he asked me a question. I gave him apparently a good answer also. And the third guy, the fourth guy, Chavah the Chavah, the Gemara says, and after a while I was flooded with questions. And here the Andava of our great Moshe Feinstein. Also unbelievable Lev Tov. That is the key to becoming a Tamachot. And that's the key to our Pasha. Aaron HaKoyin is the one with the Lev Tov. Aaron HaKoyin is the one with the unbelievably overflowing heart. And as I said a few moments ago, to me, the most striking thing of this year, perhaps, was what I heard from HaKoyin HaDevitzel Shlita, who's also completely laid, all heart, totally devoted to Klal Yisrael, that the reason Aaron HaKoyin did not dive into Hashem, didn't pray to Hashem to get the Eretz Yisrael, because it might have Rachman Litzlan hurt his brother Moshe Rabbeinu, and he was not... His leg was so overflowing with love for Moshe Rabbeinu, there was no way he could hurt his brother. The incredibly striking lessons that we learned here from Lev Tov. We have to develop a Lev Tov, a good heart. We have to love every member of Klal Yisrael. We're surrounded with machloket. I don't understand it, but they tell me, harav ata Amerikai. What would you understand about this? You're an American, so you don't understand Israeli culture. I'm only here 24 years. I told someone I'm here, Kwan, I said, Baba Shanim. He said, you're a greener. Greener means you just arrived at the sea. You don't fully grasp. There's no reason to have any machloket. Neither between Ashkenazim themselves, nor between Sfardim themselves, nor between Ashkenazim and Sfardim. I say this many times. You know why we have Sfardim in our yeshiva? Because we have Ashkenazim who never heard of Sfardim. I'm not aware they're Sfardim. I hate to say we have Sfardim who never heard of Ashkenazim. So it works both ways, in two directions. It's possible for all of us to live together. Hinei matov manoyim, shevet achim, yam yachim.